It's August 15th, 2011. This is the Hell Yeah Show. Hello and welcome to the Hell Yeah Show, episode 3. It's August 15th, and I'm Alan.
I'm Emery.
And we're going to be telling you how to live your life better. This is the show where we talk about all topics, large and small, mostly about technology, and we give you better tips for what was our slogan?
You know
again?
What? I think I think our slogan should be best practices for fail-free living.
Best practices for fail-free living. You know, I wrote that down this time.
Good. All right. Yeah, I see that.
Very good. Yeah, I wrote it in the Google Docs. You can see it too.
I am watching it in real time.
All right. That will probably stay in the final recording. So.
Okay, that's fine.
Welcome to Hell Yeah Show.
Welcome back. Episode 3.
Yeah, we don't have anything together over here, but we've got a lot of topics to discuss this show. And the first of which is DEF CON, which happened not last week, but the week before. Last week, we did not end up with any time to discuss it. So we've got it on the agenda this week because Emery knows a little bit about what went on at DEF CON.
Yeah, and, I actually wants to inform you all. I didn't attend this year, but the year before I did. And this year, some of the things that were the most interesting, I think, were namely a couple of presentations about SCADA, which is... Well, all the power plants and all their associated whatnot all use this topology called SCADA. And so when the plants are talking to control units and doing things like sending electricity places or moving bits around to get water from place to place and anything to do with that, they're all going over this network called SCADA. So there's been a lot of vulnerabilities released in the last, I want to say, 9 months or so in software that's used inside these SCADA networks. And then on top of that, there was a little thing called the Stuxnet worm, which made a couple of headlines. And Stux was also designed to target these types of systems and these industrial controllers and go after those and spam them with bad commands and send them, you know, basically shut down and disables and all sorts of nonsense. But there were some things coming out of DEF CON this year related to that that I think will probably, hopefully, go a long way to improving some of that infrastructure so that it's not so vulnerable now. I mean, a lot of it is just a matter of expertise, I think. And the other part of it is going to be just people that are using ancient software and really old devices to run these power plants.
Did the whole Stuxnet thing happen before last year's DEF CON, or was that in the past year?
I don't know about that. I'm not certain about the timeline on that. I want to say that Stux was going around before the last DEF CON because I remember there being some speculation going around a year ago, but I'm not certain.
Huh. But it was on the agenda this year in a bigger way.
Yeah, not necessarily Stux, but SCADA system security general, like these little embedded devices that all of the power plants are using. And I guess one of my colleagues was telling me that a lot of the power plants in the United States that have been, you know, replicated all around the world, in a lot of cases, you know, they were designed in like the 70s and haven't really improved any since then. So some of the software that's in use in those is not from the 70s, but it's definitely dated and doesn't get a whole lot of attention. And it's usually not, you know, implemented by security professionals or pen testers and auditors and things like that.
It's the kind of thing that you install once and just leave there as long as it works, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And the plants are largely, you know, it's a mechanical engineering outfit, I would imagine, for the most part. So there's probably not a lot of people walking around there, you know, writing Rails applications to turn on electricity. So I'm not really sure what the real potential there is or what people are going to be able to accomplish. I think that the power system, I don't know nearly enough to be qualified to even comment really on energy policy or things like that. But I've seen pictures of power plants in the United States, and I've heard stories from people that have been inside them and worked at them, and from what I can tell, they're all falling apart. So you know, some well-written exploit code circulating through power plants would probably be a really big deal. Wow. In the United States. So hopefully people are taking it seriously and getting a move on there. I was more interested by the news out of DEF CON that circulated a few days after the conference ended. DEF CON's kind of the bookend, the end of a week that starts with the Black Hat conference.
Yeah, I was actually going to say, for those out there who are not that familiar with DEF CON, you want to give us an overview of sort of how the whole thing goes down?
Yeah, so... Well, it's a conference of hackers in all senses of the word. So it's the more traditional hacking for fun types, and then there's probably also there are some people that attend that are kind of the hacking for profit types, and then there's federal agents and pretty much everyone in between. But most of the talks that happen at DEF CON and Black Hat are from security professionals and some or researchers who are there to present either, in a lot of cases, wow, in some cases it's a vulnerability. Did you hear that train whistle go off?
Yeah.
My pants there? That was, I wish that was a
you recording effect. from Grand Central Station today?
Yeah. Pretty much as a slide whistle. there is a, the conference itself, most of the sessions that you'll go to are going to be from researchers, that are either, demonstrating something new and interesting, which can be anything from last year I saw a presentation where someone set up a bogus cell phone tower and was able to move most of an auditorium onto his fake cell network to eavesdrop and intercept phone calls. And, the equipment that he used for this was, I think it was somewhere under $10,000 for all of it and could disrupt the phone conversations for a city of the size of Las Vegas.
Huh. And was this something that he just up and built out of pocket or is there someone that's funding these projects?
No. In his case, he built it himself. I don't know that they're always like that. I think some of them have some sort of sponsorship in some way, but I saw a presentation last year, someone who wrote a piece of software called, I believe it's called Blitzerbleiter. And what it does, it intercepts, it's a wrapper for Adobe Flash. And it essentially jails Flash and doesn't allow Flash to do dumb things.
Wow. But
I don't know how, now Flash has its own built-in sandbox and jailing. But his also did some sort of it would actually check for malicious activity in a Swift and do other things based on that. I can't remember everything about it, but it was a pretty cool presentation.
Yeah.
But this year there was an email that got sent out to the full disclosure mailing list, which is a listserv from many, many years ago. I mean, it's probably been around since the mid 90s, which so long ago, but, someone has this allegation that there was a very large scale CDMA man in the middle attack at the Rio, and that the cellular communications traffic from mobile devices on that network, which would be Sprint or Verizon or Virgin, who uses the Sprint network. I think that's pretty much it, right? Yeah. Those devices were apparently man in the middle, and some of the symptoms of that man in the middle attack may include things like having a full signal but very slow data, having what was one of the other ones, a very warm battery and no signal but still able to receive phone calls. there was a lot of a lot of strange activity going on apparently, and this is all kind of second and third hand for me, so I'm not sure. A year ago at that DEF CON, that was the same week that someone, the gentleman that was just profiled in, was it Forbes or Fortune, the kid that does the jailbreaks in New Hampshire, or one of the people that does jailbreaks.
Is it GeoHot?
Not GeoHot. It was somebody else. Yeah. Huh. But anyways, he did the Jailbreak Me website, where you go to this web page and slide the thing and it loads
Does that still work? That I remember that being on the original iPhone.
I think. Well, it was, a year ago when it worked on a 3GS. Yeah. But it was iOS 3 at the time. I don't know if he's updated the exploit or not. The one from a year ago was. I believe that was a PDF exploit. So there was a overrun or some sort of a vulnerability in the software that the iPhone uses to read PDF documents that could let you execute unsigned code on the device. And so I'm pretty sure that was a PDF exploit that he was using.
Yeah, I think the original one was too. The whenever it was on the original iPhone before apps were available or any of that stuff. Where someone and at that point someone went into an Apple store and pointed every phone to the jailbreaking website.
Yeah.
Anyway, what other updates from DEF CON? I see you've got an Apple battery hack here as well.
There's a gentleman from St. Louis, Missouri, who was presenting at DEF CON this year also. His presentation was on Apple's use of the battery software from Texas Instruments that they use on the MacBook Pro. There is a default password to the battery. And Apple apparently didn't change the default password. So you could do things like send commands to the battery. And, you know, it's not really well documented for outsiders what those commands might be. So his website was pretty funny. There's like a picture of a pile of dead batteries that he's like, you know, burned through trying to figure out how to talk to them. Whoa. But yeah. But as far as I know, there is not a circulating piece of exploit code that could, for example, intentionally heat your battery or charge it past its capacity and cause it to burst into flames or anything.
Right.
But definitely can drain it down and, you know, put undue strain on a battery. But hopefully something that Apple will address in the future.
Yeah. Yeah. So overall, though, this year's DEF CON, as it compares to previous years, I know you weren't there this year, but what do you think the outlook is after it?
Well, there wasn't the same, you know, I think there was definitely more attention being paid to the man in the middle presentation last year where someone hijacked GSM service. But this year, the SCADA stuff that's being done with, I think it's called a Siemens PLU. There's a, let me see if I can, I'll be typing on the internet trying to figure this out, because there's a very particular piece of equipment that they were using that, someone was telling me about that was pretty cool. Maybe PLC? Yeah.
What were they using it to do, though?
Well, it's just they're the like an interface between the SCADA network and other systems, and they have like these little embedded devices that they have all over the place, and I think that they're called a PLC. See, this is how prepared I am today. I didn't even like really review any of this, but suffice to say there's a gizmo, and attacking it can cause problems. So I don't know. I think this year's DEF CON was probably the people that I talked to that attended said it was fantastic, but maybe no, not necessarily for technical reasons. It was mainly just a really good time. But all right. It can be a lot of fun.
Yeah, good. I've never attended myself. I've watched some coverage of it here and there, but haven't really followed it that closely. But it's certainly nice that it's there. It's good that it happens.
It is pretty good. There's, it's a pretty big conference. I mean, it's been going on for quite a while. But I guess I did do some research here, and it looks like it is a programmable logic controller. So it is a PLC, and you can allow an attacker to have complete control of the device. So there's apparently some exploit code available for these PLCs that lets you do things like control turbines. And like raise and lower the speed of turbines, and also potentially open gates on dams or other
that
anything.
Would be that, lovely, yeah.
You know, these power plants have an awful lot of very large things,
right?
Like
right.
Giant fans, giant dams, etc. And being able to send commands to the devices that can control those can have some pretty devastating impact. It's pretty frightening, especially considering that I guess. There's a report out not too long ago, a couple years back, that was like, you know, critical infrastructure being vulnerable. Like just power plants in general had lack security physically.
Well, so embedded devices in general, though, seem like they'd be more vulnerable to this sort of thing. I'd imagine the same thing is true for cars or, any other device that has sort of a lot of software in it, but software that's not updated all that often.
Yep. Yep. Anything that's kind of put into like a code freeze and shipped out definitely will be behind the times. There are some devices that I come into contact with that ship with like Windows XP embedded. And I'm sure someone out there is still shipping something that comes with Windows 2000. And it's just, you know, they've built something for one particular system and they've never gone back to certify it on any other platform. Medical instruments in hospitals frequently have really bad, really terrible OSs on them. And they're also sometimes on networks where you're allowed to, you know, talk to one another pretty easily without a whole lot of protection there. One time I was in an emergency room at a hospital in Rhode Island with my wife, and it was like, I want to say super late on a Friday night or a Thursday night or something, and we're checking into the ER, and on our way back to an exam room, we walk past one of the workstations, like a cart, and there's a gal like browsing Craigslist personals on a computer that she then wheels into the exam room to start asking us, like, you know, name, social security number, and all this. And I'm like, you know, are you kidding me? Like, I was completely beside myself, and I asked for another computer, and then I complained loudly until I found someone would help me out. But yeah, it was I don't have a lot of patience for that, mainly because, you know, I, on a daily basis, get to watch really horrible things happen to computers that aren't well managed or do dumb things. And it can be kind of dicey, but
yeah. So the power plants specifically, I bet PowerPoint has some vulnerabilities, but the power plants themselves, they're not connected to the network though, are they? The embedded systems in those?
A lot of times they are.
Really?
Yeah, not only are they frequently on networks to talk to each other inside the power plant, but some of them even are somewhat connected to the internet. You know, people at the power plants like to be able to do things like send email. The DOEs, I think the Department of Energy has some sort of, they have some sort of a network that all of these stations are on, but I don't really know a whole lot about it. But I remember reading an article not too long ago that said that they claimed that a lot of research labs and facilities on the Department of Energy network had been compromised and were part of like an ongoing advanced persistent threat, which I don't know how much I really believe that there is an advanced persistent threat against them as much as there is an advanced persistent threat against everybody. I think that the term gets overused a little bit, but it's entirely possible, though, that they're, you know, actively being targeted. Who knows? But yeah, there's definitely internet connectivity to power plants of some sort. You know, how well maintained and how protected that is, or how segregated it is from the rest of the facility, I couldn't tell you. I would hope very well, but who knows?
Right, right.
You know, this is one of those black boxes, right? Like, they don't have to tell you. And, you know, most people, if they've heard the answer, might not even understand it. So they'll just do what they got to do and tell everyone that everything's fine. Who knows?
All right. Well, that's DEF CON. It sounds like some good stuff this year. Maybe not quite as sensational as previous years. But always good to check in on DEF CON. All right. So on another topic here, this topic has been in the notes for, since the very first episode, probably before the first episode. And that is baggage. You really like baggage.
Yeah, I'm kind of a bag lady. it's kind of terrible, actually. Over the years, I don't even know how many I've had in my possession at some point, but I don't really linger too long on most of them.
So this is weird to me, because for me, a bag is something that I keep for years. A bag is something that I'm going to buy once because I know I'm going to use it for a long time. And I'm not going to replace it that often because it's not something that there's going to be that much of a difference in functionality.
Oh, Alan, I don't want to replace them all the time. It's just that, you know, I just haven't found the perfect one yet.
Ah, okay. Okay. I thought this was a you know, sort of like next year's model had the new thing you were looking for. But
there is a certain amount of that. But there's also, first of all, I like some flexibility. I like having more than one. I think ideally, if I could have it down to like two or three, that'd be great. Sadly, at this time, I think, I want to say I have at least six.
But. Wow. You want to run through them?
Yeah, sure. So in order of use right now, I'll do it that way.
Okay.
I have a Mission Workshop Rambler. And they are made in the United States in San Francisco.
In the Mission, I'd imagine, yeah.
Yeah. I can't remember if they're in LA or if they're in San Francisco. I knew they're in California, but
I mean, there's a region in San Francisco, the Mission. So I'd.
Yep. Oh, yes. Really? Tell me more. I've never heard of this magical place.
I'm just saying, those of you out there.
You and your homies in Oaktown.
Yeah.
You got the, you're going to be back there in a couple weeks. So I understand.
You know me. You
got to keep your cred.
I'm in the city.
Yeah. You've just, you've heard your first Snoop track. But the Mission Workshop has a lot of great bags. They have a several messenger style bags they look fantastic. I don't have any of those. I have the Rambler, which is the smaller brother of their big backpack called the Vandal. And the Rambler is quite nice. I like it a lot. I have it in gray. And the things I like about it are that it has a expandable middle chamber. So most of the time, I just slip my MacBook in the back part, which is also a roll top, optionally. And then I'll also have like a folder or two or three that I'll put in there with it. And then a front pocket area that has a zipper. It's all waterproof. It even has a gusset, or is it a gusset or a gasket? I don't know. It's got some sort of a thing on the bottom of it that you can like drain water out of if you get it wet. Grommet. It's a grommet. That's the word I was looking for.
One of those, one of those G terms.
Yeah, one of those G things. Hey, see, another well fantastic hip-hop reference.
Well
so,
done.
Yeah, it's a great bag. I like it a lot. They're one of those, the one thing I don't like about it so much is that the outside of it doesn't really have a lot of storage. So it's kind of like a messenger in that it has a lot of room, that it's all like wide open space. Now, the back part is nice because it's somewhat protected and narrow and in its own little section. And like I said, it's got this roll top part. You should go to their website, Mission Workshop. It's pretty great.
Let me check it out.
Yeah. And then but the front of it has a pocket. And the one pocket is great for like a phone or an iPod or a very narrow glasses case, but not much else. It's my only complaint about the bag, I don't mind the size of that pocket if they would have one on the opposite side. So if there were like two little pockets like that, I'd actually be a lot happier. But on a day, like on a daily basis, that's usually the bag I go for, mainly because if I need to do like a grocery run or anything after work, it's very easy to convert the bag from a fairly slim profiled backpack that is very comfortable into something that can hold a small keg and also still be comfortable. You can, the whole middle like unzips and then there's retaining straps that hold its shape. And then you switch out from like a flap to the roll down style. And then you have this really huge voluminous backpack.
So it, overall, so this is a backpack, but
yep.
You've presumably used messenger bags as well. What's the, what's your opinion on that?
It really depends. I have a Chrome Mini Messenger, and I like it a lot. I mean, a lot of people that have the Chrome bags love them. It's pretty comfortable. My only complaint about it is that I don't like to carry a lot of weight for an extended period of time on a messenger. My back, it just hurts. Yeah. It's just not comfortable for me. I can do it fine for short trips and not a long time, but I prefer carrying a messenger bag like the Chrome messenger bag to one of my other bags, which is a Rickshaw Commuter 2. And Rickshaw bags are also in San Francisco and made there. It's a really great like attaché style over the shoulder bag with a big strap and a handle and lots of pouches and compartments and places for pens and pencils and a water bottle. And it has like a nice padded laptop area and it has two separate zippers. I mean, it's great for it's the exact opposite of a messenger bag. So instead of the one big storage unit, it's basically a whole bunch of storage units that are pretty well segregated. That one, however, I find very uncomfortable for a long period of time. That's the bag I took with to DEF CON last year, and I was really tired of lugging it around at the end of the day, every day. And, I wanted to get rid of it, and I couldn't find anyone that wants to buy it.
Huh. So, yeah, what's the resale market like for bags?
for a lot of them, it's not great. For okay, if you do a lot of photography and you have like one of the nice, really heavily padded photo bags from Crumpler, those have a pretty lively resale market.
The $X million home.
Yeah, yeah, the $7 million home, the $8 million. Those bags tend to have a pretty strong following. I've had several Crumpler bags. Also, I've had the Considerable Embarrassment, and I've had the Horseman. And what else have I had from them? Those are the two main ones. And the Horseman I didn't like because the retention strap for it is in a really dumb place. And the Considerable Embarrassment doesn't have a retention strap. It's somewhat more comfortable, but because I can't anchor it, I couldn't really reliably use it as often as I would like. Liz uses it for her for some of her knitting now.
But then I also,
one of my fanciest bags though, and one of my favorites, actually there's two in this style. So when it comes to like smaller bags that I can just toss over my shoulder and carry like maybe a laptop, but probably like a notebook and an iPod and headphones and whatever, a book or something, or my iPad, Waterfield, I have a Vertigo. And I know you have a bag from them that you love also, and I'll let you talk about it. But the other bag that I have, it's similar to that, but a little bit fancier, is from Airbag Kraftworks in Germany, I think. There, it's called the Offenbach, and it's a like canvas. I want to say, yeah, it's like a canvas and leather with a really nice heavy-duty nylon strap and big metal. All of the hardware on it is metal, and I like it a lot. But it, and it's a little dressy, and it's a little fancy, and it's also heavy. And it's heavy because of the metal hardware, and it also has like a lining to it, and it's got like kind of a. It's hard to explain, but it has pretty. It's a nice bag. I'll take a picture and throw it on the website or something.
Yeah, we'll definitely if you go to show.hellyeah.com, we will have details on these bags, links to places where you can find out more about each bag.
Giving me all kinds of work.
Well, I can do Googling myself.
All right.
try and track down these links. Then I might wait. Did you run through all of them? I lost count.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. I mean, I also have one from Patagonia that's like a really small, like a wet bag for if I'm just like going on a bike ride or something and throw a water bottle and a towel in. And then what else do I have? Bobblebee. They make it's a hard shell backpack. And if I, you know, need to carry something fragile, it's a good bag for that. That's a bag that I've done some international travel with, and many baggage handlers from all around the world have been unable to damage the contents of whatever I put inside of it. So that's always a plus. But it doesn't have a whole lot of room to it. It's a very big bag, and I do like the Bobblebee a lot. It's just I get a lot of compliments on it. People are always like really mystified by it. But my go-to right now is the Mission Workshop Rambler. I actually took it out with me on ATV trails in Wisconsin a few weeks ago, and I was covered head to toe with mud, and I've hosed it down, and I need to go out and get like a grill brush or something to finish cleaning it off because I still have like mud all over it. But I've been able to like hose it down and drop it in a sink and dry it out just by hanging it up. It's been pretty good to clean. At least the dirt and the mud are off. It definitely took a beating out on the trails, but I have no doubt that it'll bounce back just fine. I sent a picture to the people at Mission Workshop, and I'm like, I'm sure you've seen your bags in worse shape than this, but this is what it looks like after going through ATV trails that are more like creek beds. We had like up to a foot and a half of water across the trails in some parts, and this is up in like cranberry bog territory, so like the water was all like this really dark red. It was pretty cool.
At good bag testing ground, I'd imagine.
I would, yes, absolutely. And I had like, I think I wedged it full of like, I had 4 bottles of water in there, and who knows what else. I think I stuffed in all kinds of crap, but it was a good bag.
Good. So for my part, I own only 2 bags, so one of them, which you mentioned earlier, and I think you're aware of this one, is from Waterfield. It's the Personal Musetto. It basically just fits an iPad, and or
Waterfield makes great stuff though.
Yeah, yeah. So Waterfield makes a bunch of different types of bags. The Musetta line is actually it was the one that I was drawn to the most of the bags that they make. But I haven't had so, and it's the only one I've had firsthand experience with. But yeah, super high quality, very intelligently designed, and you know you can tell they put a lot of care into it, and it works well. Definitely fits the iPad well, and that's primarily what I've used it for. I've also thrown a camera in there, actually a DSLR camera, a Canon D40 or 40D actually. And it fits. It's.
Did you have to take the lens off the body or?
No. It fits with the lens. It's a little awkward, and it's not super secure, or it's not padded to the point where I'd you know be fine throwing that in or tossing it around or you know doing something with it that wasn't carrying it very carefully on my body.
They make bigger Musettas though, like. Yeah. Musettas, though. They have like several different sizes. And I think, you know, and I say this because one day it would be great if they were a sponsor of this fine show. But one thing I've always loved about them, I've ordered their neoprene sleeves for laptops.
Oh, yeah.
I've owned, I want to say, at least half a dozen of them with every laptop I've ever had. On my new 13-inch Air, I have one of their suede jackets. I thought I'd give that a try. love that. The neoprene slip cases, though, are fantastic. Easily the best in class, absolutely. Pretty much anything Waterfield makes is going to be top shelf.
And they make bags for pretty much everything. Everything from like a wallet to cables to... They've got a Nintendo 3DS case here. That just came out like a few months ago.
You know, I have one of their iPod... We have in our household two Generation 1 Rev A iPods. I have one of their original iPod cases for that. I also have one of their cases called a Cable Guy, which has a separate, like two separate sides to it and dividers inside of it. And it's like a little pouch that you can keep your adapters with. So when I travel, I just grab my Cable Guy out the door and toss it into my bag because I have a spare MagSafe adapter. I have a spare wall charger for an iPod iPhone. And I have my AV like my iOS device, composite audio and video cable adapter. So if I'm at a hotel or at someone's house, I can hook up my iPhone or iPad to a television or home theater system and play a movie. It's fantastic. I also have two of their other gear pouches. I've got a small one, and then I have one of the bigger ones. Love their stuff. Fantastic people. And I like the handwritten note from the owner when you order something.
That is fantastic. Yeah. That may have been the tipping point. Where it was, I was reading about this bag and I was thinking about, because I just recently gotten an iPad and I need something to carry it around in that wasn't my other bag, which I'll talk about in a bit.
And I were trading text messages over this too at some point.
Yeah, yeah. And I was going back and forth on it because it's a more expensive bag than I'm used to because I don't normally buy a bunch of expensive bags. Yeah. So I was kind of wavering back and forth on the purchase, and at some point I read about the personal note from the owner. I'm like, okay, these guys really care about their bags.
Yep, they're the real deal.
Yep. So another company that you may not have such a rosy outlook on, based on the last time I talked to you about my other bag, it's a Timbuktu.
Oh, damn it!
I mentioned this to you a while ago, and I remember a negative reaction then too.
No, they're fine.
They're fine? Okay.
My only real complaint about them was that, and they have some of their manufacturing is done in the United States, and it's been really good. Like, the stuff that I know that they're making here is really good, but some of the stuff they were getting sourced from somewhere else for a while wasn't so hot, and I didn't like that they were just everywhere. Like, you cannot turn your head without seeing them, and I don't know. I like having something for me that's a little bit unique. In some way, I guess. I don't know. I mean, I guess my Chrome bag is probably not the most unique thing, but for people in the Bay Area, they probably see them all over the place, or in New York, people with bike messengers being used probably see them all the time. But in Rhode Island and DC, I never saw a lot of them floating around. But I don't know, the Timbuktu stuff. I never really got into, and I don't know. But a guy in my office has one of their bags that's. I guess it's like their laptop TSA bag, and it's pretty cool. I don't know.
Yeah. So the bag that I have from them is a... I don't know if the bag itself is called the 17-inch, but it's their standard messenger bag, and it is meant to hold a 17-inch laptop, because when I bought it, I had a 17-inch MacBook Pro. Now I've got a 15-inch MacBook Pro, and that actually fits reasonably well in it as well, and doesn't move around too much, and feels pretty secure. It's got a separate separate compartment for a laptop specifically, which I like, a padded compartment. It's got a whole bunch of pockets. I keep a VGA cable, all sorts of iOS device adapters, flashlight, sunglasses, earbuds, power adapter, everything I keep in the various pockets in there, and generally don't even notice it. They sort of hide the bulk of whatever I'm throwing in there, and then still have plenty of space in the main compartment for whatever I'm throwing in there, be it books or... I actually took a 6-day trip to Europe using just that bag, just threw a bunch of clothes into that bag, electronic devices. Yeah. And did a 6-day international trip, with just that bag. So it definitely fits a lot of stuff. It's very good in that regard. Yeah. It was pretty awesome to travel internationally with just a messenger bag. That was pretty good.
Yeah. No kidding.
Yeah. Anyway. I like it, and it works fine for my uses, maybe just because I haven't experienced the bag nirvana that you may have. but it generally satisfies my day-to-day needs and is very durable. I think it's ballistic nylon, and tends to do a good job, although maybe not as highly regarded in some elite bag circles. So.
You know, someone was telling me that the... there's something wonky about some of the materials that Crumpler uses, and that they don't actually use like a Cordura, that's some other material, or I don't remember what it was, but someone was telling me that they don't like Crumpler bags because they use this other material and they don't think that it's as good. And there might, you know, I don't know, but, really heavy nylon, ballistic nylon. I like that. I don't like air mesh though. Have you seen like how a lot of bags have usually on like the part that goes against your back, they'll put like a kind of a really fine webbing or something over whatever padding they have?
Let me say I've not seen a lot of bags. So.
Oh, okay. Well,
but I can imagine though. Yeah.
Yeah. People use it all over the place. I'm trying to grab my Rambler. The Rambler actually has it to some extent. It's not. It's probably the best implementation of it that I've ever seen. Mainly because, I don't know, it just holds up a lot better than I had thought that it might. But I really wish that people would get away from using it, just because it feels flimsy most of the time. And I'm always afraid that it's going to like snag or tear or something. I don't know.
Well, yeah, if something got caught on it.
Yeah, because it has like all this open spot, and it's like, and when you're putting on a backpack, you're always like stretching it and flexing that material. You know what right. I mean? Like you're yep. always like kind of moving it around, and you know, straps and things get underneath, and there's a lot of potential there. But I guess, you know, it must be okay. I've never had it like, you know, tear open or anything.
Right. So if you were to recommend one bag of all the ones you have experience with. Let's say one messenger bag, one backpack. How about that?
Oh. Well, it really, you know, it depends entirely on what you're carrying and what your individual style and preference is, you know, like, in terms of like straight messenger bags, I think a messenger is styled as like a bicycle messenger where it sits up high on your back. Whereas like some people would call a messenger bag like a bag with a shoulder strap that you wear like at your waist or, you know, behind you. For that type of a bag, for like carrying a laptop around, I'd probably say that, you know, the rickshaw commuter is probably my favorite in that style. In messenger bags, I would say that I prefer Chrome or, you know, I've never owned one of the Mission Workshop messengers, but I'm sure they're great. But for backpack, I gotta go with the Rambler. I wish it had that one other pocket. you know. But other than that, like, I love it, and it's a very versatile, very flexible bag. It can be as light or as heavy as I want it, and I really liked having it around. It's been really good for me.
Good, good.
Yeah, Liz has I can't remember. I think it's Eagle Creek. She has a bag that has wheels and a like retractable handle on it. Because she carries around a bunch of books and lots and lots and lots of papers, and does a lot of walking around campus and stuff. And she likes a bag like that. Then there's also she has like for fancier occasions, like if she goes to a conference. She has a couple years ago, we got her a bag from Levenger called, what is it called? The Livingston. And it's a really nice leather briefcase style shoulder bag. It's very heavy because it's big and leather, and it doesn't hold as much as some bags, but it looks fantastic. And you know, it's good for papers, and you can carry a laptop and, you know, a book and stuff like that, but you can't, like, you know, load it up and haul it around with your everyday material.
Well, and you're probably nervous about it getting scratched up and that sort of stuff too.
Well, not so much, you know, like a leather bag getting scratched up is kind of nice, I think.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I mean, there's something about having something well used and well worn.
Yeah, definitely.
The one thing I don't want to have scratched is, like, you know, the front of my phone.
Yes. So speaking of phones, yep. I don't know how we made that transition, but if you were to say you were using your phone you wanted to access all of the bookmarks from your laptop, how would you do that?
Well, all of the bookmarks?
All of the bookmarks. Some of the bookmarks.
I use MobileMe, so of course all of my bookmarks are synchronized because I'm a proper Mac user.
Oh, okay. You're not a MobileMe member.
I have no idea. I would, you know, the social bookmarking services like Digo and Delicious and those guys. There's also this thing called Quick. But that's not really a bookmark thing.
Oh, really? Okay. No. So I was trying to make this segue into.
I know what you're trying to do, but I was trying to correct the plane before it landed in the.
The plane has landed. We're at the terminal, and we're talking about QuickSap.
Yeah. So QuickSap is something I think I got from one of the many fine shows on the 5x5 network. I think it was on Back to Work, or Merlin mentioned it somewhere. Merlin Mann, have you heard of him?
I have. Yeah.
So there's this thing called QuickSap, and it's QUIXApp.com. And what you do is you go there, and they give you like this little bookmarklet, which, you know, you drag up onto your bookmark bar in your browser. And then I don't know about all browsers, but a lot of them, like in Safari, if you can put folders in your bookmark bar, but you can also put individual bookmarks, and you can refer to bookmarks by the number. So my little QuickSap bookmarklet is the first thing in my bookmarks bar in Safari. So just hitting command 1 will activate it. Mm-hmm. And what it does is it has like some logic built into it, and it lets you do things like assign mnemonics for commands for the web. So if I'm looking at a web page and I want to send the web page I'm currently looking at to Instapaper, I just hit command 1 and a little dialog box pops up, and I type RL for read later, and I hit enter, mm-hmm. and it sends it off to Instapaper. And then if I want to bookmark it on Digo, I just type DD and hit enter, and it sends it to Digo. If I want to do a Google search, I can just hit it, command 1, and then type GS, space, and then whatever I'm looking for, and it'll search for it on Google. I can also search for things on Google with the site appended for the current domain name that I'm looking at. So if I go to show.helga.com and I do a Google search for that domain, I could do like GSD and then, 1x01, and it will return a match against the domain name show.helga.com. It's pretty cool. You can also do things like look up items on Amazon, other search engines, things like Flickr. You can easily search for whatever you're currently looking at and then match that and send it over. There's a lot of fancy things you can do with QuickSap, and I think it's one of the more indispensable tools that I've come into contact with. You can create your own hooks for that, and I can try to share some of those on our website. a couple of them in particular that I think are really handy, like the Instapaper one, because it doesn't come with that from the factory. You have to add it yourself. What else?
So you can presumably have regular bookmarks on here too, just then the utility is rather limited. It's just taking you to the site, right?
Yeah, yeah. I prefer to, you know, you can put little aliases or whatever you want for commonly used websites. I mean, the one I use a lot is like the, you know, the FB one for Facebook. If I'm looking at a news story and I want to share it with someone on Facebook, I just hit that.
Yep.
But yeah, you can also have it so that when you pop up that dialogue, you can do things like, you know, just type in home and it'll take you to a homepage or your house or whatever. And then you just have like this one single JavaScript bookmarklet that lets you drive wherever you want to go.
Very good.
It's pretty sweet. I like it a lot. Have you tried it before?
I have not tried it. No. I was very familiar with it before this show. by my extensive knowledge of it.
Yeah, I
checked it out briefly when you sent me the link, but clearly did not grasp the fact that it was, in fact, a bookmarklet manager.
Yes.
Beyond just a bookmark manager. So.
Yeah, I used to use URL Manager Pro, and oddly enough, I got an email today saying, hey, the new version of URL Manager Pro is on the App Store. And I was like, I haven't used this application since 2004. But I'll go check it out. And I took a peek, and sure enough, it's very true to form. If you were a user of URL Manager Pro a long time ago, it probably has not changed a lot. It looks very much like it did, but now works on Lion, I guess. There were some compatibility issues, and looks like the developer has that going too. So if you prefer to keep your bookmarks local instead of pushing them out to services, like I said in episode one, I like Digo. I like them, but I'm not married to them. I would probably be happier with Pinboard, but I like the highlighting and stuff that Digo gives. And yeah.
So I'm generally skeptical of apps with Pro on the end of the name, though.
Yeah.
URL Manager Pro sounds a little you know, business usery to me.
Yeah, like Final Cut Pro.
Final Cut Pro, yeah.
What a bunch of stuffed shirts those guys were.
I know. Audio Hijack Pro. It's not like I'm using that to record this podcast or anything.
Yeah, well, we've given them lots and lots of money so we can bring the people this fine, entertaining podcast.
I know.
We're just trying to make the people happy, Alan.
Yes, yeah. Speaking of making the people happy, my segues are right on today. we want to talk about an episode of Star Trek Next Generation because that's what we're doing on this show now. Mm-hmm. It's a new segment, and by new segment, I mean we did it two shows out of three now. And also, we're discussing...
I would like to talk about at some point also that I'm kind of disappointed in this season of True Blood. Are you watching True Blood?
I'm not watching True Blood, no.
It's a pretty good show, but I take that back. It is now... We might be on the cusp of it becoming a guilty pleasure show for me, like The Desperate Housewives. I think it was a much better show than it is right now. Right now, it's not so great, and I don't want to spoil it for anybody, but I'm not enjoying it as much as I should, and I would almost prefer to watch The Desperate Housewives at this point.
Ah, okay. Although I'm not sure at this point that I trust the television recommendations of somebody who watches Desperate Housewives.
Well, you shouldn't, because that's a terrible show too, and I have no idea how it got me, but it did. And it has me in its grasp and will not let me go. I know it's bad. Don't think that you can't trust my recommendations because I watched the show. I know it's terrible.
All right.
It's not like I'm not blind to that.
Uh huh. But and yet you devote, how long is it, an hour?
It's like 45 minutes without commercials.
every week.
Well, not every week. It's an off season right now. I've had my summer free from the Housewives.
Oh, and it's not quite quite churn out episodes at a soap opera rate. It is
absolutely a soap opera. Like it has a lot of the same elements that very famous soap operas have. Ridiculous plot lines, unlikely. I don't know. It's And Terry Hatcher's terrible. Like, I don't know how she ever got cast on anything. She's a terrible actor. But I don't know. I can't explain it. It's one of the shows that I watch that's just stupid. And I know it's dumb, but I still like it. There's something about it.
Hmm. So on the topic
like
of
Star
non
Trek,
yeah on the topic generation. Of non stupid shows, Star Trek: The Next Generation. We watched season 2 episode 1 last show and didn't really care for it. Neither of us really liked that episode. Yeah. But we watched season 2 episode 2 this show and I really liked it. I don't know what you thought.
I thought it was great. And I actually remembered this one too. I don't know that I watched it when it originally aired, you know, but I definitely saw it a few years ago and I remembered it. It was a good episode.
Yeah, yeah. Although, what I really like about this sort of episode is you get this mystery at the beginning where no one knows what's going on, and the whole episode is about them using their logical capabilities to figure out a solution to the problem they're confronted with. And that is the narrative arc of the episode. I love that about Next Generation when it happens.
Yeah.
And it definitely
it's kind of like, did you ever watch the show Monk?
Like 2 episodes.
That's a good show. Well, again, with a slight disclaimer, Monk is one of my favorite shows, but my favorite Monk episodes were the ones where they don't give away the crime in the first 5 minutes. So there were several episodes that are kind of like a Murder, She Wrote. Like my friend JD, he's like, some of the Monk episodes are very good and the rest of them are like Murder, She Wrote, where they, you know, they show you the crime taking place and you see the person doing the murder, and then the rest of the episode you're watching Monk catch up. And I don't like those episodes. I always like the ones best where something happens but you don't know what it is and you're trying to figure it out along with Monk. Those were the greatest episodes of that show. So like on Star Trek, The Next Generation, I like the ones where, like you said, there's some sort of danger and they have to figure out how they're going to get around it. And it's not something they can like brute force. They got to use finesse and they got to use diplomacy and they got to use their wits. And I like that a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Using their brains, not their phasers.
And if there's a holodeck scene, that doesn't hurt.
So that is actually the first item on my notes here, is and I quote, "I knew it was on the holodeck." when those episodes open up with some, you know, bizarrely dramatic scene, you just know it's going to cut to some holodeck program.
Yeah, I don't like the ones that are like in the 1940s though. I don't know.
I've not seen enough Next Generation to fully sample the range of holodeck experiences, but
the holodeck is probably one of the great, you know, that's right up there with flying cars and hoverboards. The holodeck are one of the three inventions that I really want someone to hurry up and make already.
Yep. Holodeck or replicator?
Oh, holodeck.
Yeah. It's a trick question because you can have a replicator inside a holodeck.
That's true. But, you know, on this episode we watched this week, though, the part where I was really wanting a holodeck is when they've activated the ship's self-destruct sequence, which is right up there with a saucer separation maneuver where they detach the top of the Enterprise from the rest of it. It's very rare, but when they do it, it's always very dramatic. And, you know, you got 20 minutes left, and Liz is like, "Wow, 20 minutes, that's not a lot of time." And I was like, "It's plenty of time to get to the holodeck and get some girls." You could have, like, you know, those last 20 minutes could be glorious.
Yep, there you go. Yeah, so the whole self-destruct thing, the whole self-destruct thing was a little odd to me, the way that all played out. But I think the episode as a whole holds plenty of water.
It was good, although what it was up with the red shirt, like, you didn't see X and he was gonna die.
this is another note that I took. red shirt moment. Who the hell is this guy? He's new.
He complains a lot.
So I was actually watching the show, this episode, with someone, and at some point before the red shirt died, but while he was at the helm, I turned to them and said, "I don't recognize this guy. I've never seen him before."
But he complains a lot.
But he seems kind of annoying. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I didn't even, again, I've not watched enough episodes of Star Trek to really get the pattern of where the red shirt appears and sort of recognizing that he is in fact going to die. But it didn't click with me until he died. And then it's, oh, hey, he's wearing a red shirt.
Yeah, well, they're all wearing red shirts. It's the Next Generation.
Right, yeah.
The standard uniform is maroon. They're all expendable.
Yeah.
So right, who are you watching this episode with?
With some family. They were in town, so.
Oh, no one, you know, special?
No Star Trek special companion. Well, you know, when you're watching Star Trek, you know, everyone wants to be a part of that, so.
We did talk about watching an episode together at some point.
Yes, and
I think that'd be great. I would also like to hold your hand when things get really scary.
Yeah, doing a riff track, definitely. Yes. Yeah,
a track where we riff upon the episode.
So I took some other notes here. Absence of everything, no antimatter, doesn't necessarily have dimension. I thought that was kind of cool.
Yeah, that's true. I like the rats in a maze.
Yes, yeah.
That analogy.
The most fundamental statement of science is, I don't know. and then, you know, the best episodes are where there's nothing going on and you and the crew kind of puzzle it out together. I thought that was quite good. And then my favorite moment probably was as the ship is about to self-destruct and and everything is highly urgent. And what does Picard do but sit around and philosophize?
Are we far enough away?
Yeah. With
warp 6, any direction.
Yeah. Very good. I just love how the tensest moments in that show are often the ones where they're sort of debating philosophy, which is is a lot of fun to watch.
Well, that's part of their mission, you know. They've got to represent humanity and do the best they can.
Yep. Yep. I thought the whole premise of this episode was quite good. You know, something that you can't or a sort of ethical situation that can only be presented in a sci-fi context for the most part. And I thought it was treated very well. So much better than season 2, episode 1, without a doubt.
Do you ever watch any of the Larry Sanders Show?
I don't even know what that is.
It was a TV show that originally aired on HBO, and it stars Gary Shandling as Larry Sanders. It's a show about a talk show being produced, and his sidekick is played by Jeffrey Tambor. And he plays someone named Hank Kingsley, and it's the origin of the expression "Hey now." So if you're listening to a radio show where the DJ plays the "Hey now," that's Jeffrey Tambor's character Hank Kingsley, and the two best characters on this show, oddly enough, are not Gary Shandling. They are Jeffrey Tambor and Rip Torn, who plays the producer Artie, and those two characters, I mean, especially the Artie character, is fantastic television. Like, Rip Torn is probably one of my favorite actors.
What's the name of the show one more time?
The Larry Sanders Show.
The Larry Sanders Show. All right. I have never heard it. Maybe it's on Netflix. If it is, I might check an episode out.
Yeah, I think something from season 1 would probably get you a really good idea of the show. And if you're kind of on the fence after that, I'll find a good Artie episode for you because those are the best ones.
All right. I was a big fan of, speaking of awesome shows, Party Down is no longer with us.
Yeah, the irony being is that it's a show about a bunch of unemployed actors that can't find work and are catering, and then they all start getting jobs. What's Her Name Goes to Glee. Like everyone on that show wound up getting hired to do some other show, so they couldn't keep it going.
Yep, yep.
That's a hilarious program, though. What was it, two seasons?
Two seasons, yeah. Both of them just spectacular. That was really good. And that was on Netflix, actually, as it was coming out. Every episode as it came out was on Netflix later that week or something like that.
So. I thought season 1 was not, and then season 2 was.
Oh, it probably was. I think I didn't tune into it until like between the season breaks, I think. And it was before that until I actually got on the bandwagon of that show. So
I think Party Down was a show my friend JD turned me on to, and then because he knew I liked Arrested Development, and
it follows well from Arrested Development, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good show.
Yep. All right. Well, that was Star Trek Season 2, Episode 2, and that is our show for today. Yeah. We are going to end exactly on an hour, though. This is going to be pretty good.
Nice. Yeah. We're real professionals now.
I know.
Can you tell me how many dozens of people have we broken the 24 listeners yet?
So we had like a couple dozen. We had like 40 listeners on our first episode. I know.
That is
awesome. And I think our second episode has been listened to by about 30 people. So,
we're losing them.
Since it's a newer episode, I'm hoping that those people that tuned in for the first one just haven't yet had their client download the second episode.
Well, we gotta have those checks go out because we're gonna start paying our listeners, right? Like $1.
$1 a listener. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, wasn't that what we agreed on?
It's the opposite of the subscriber model.
Yeah. Yeah. We're paying you to subscribe. No. Yeah, it'd be great. We're doing pretty well though.
Yeah.
We're very entertaining.
We're great. These shows
People in our Warcraft guild really like us.
Yeah. our close friends love this show. So that's really all we can hope for, right?
Yeah, that's the best.
All right. Well, if you are out there and you are some random listener and you're enjoying or you are really not enjoying this show, because I don't think you can really be in between. Either you're really enjoying the show or you're really not enjoying the show. And if it's the latter, you probably did not make it this far. So in that case, if you're really enjoying this show, shoot us an email at show@hellyeah.com? I always forget the email. Okay.
show@hellyeah.com, and the website is show.hellyeah.com.
Excellent. Excellent.
HELLYEAH.com.
Hell yeah. Anyway, so yeah, check out the show notes. They'll be up soon. show.hellyeah.com, including a full list of Emery's messenger bags and backpacks. Yes. That will do it for Hell Yeah Show Episode 3. I'm Alan.
I'm Emery.
And we'll see you next week.
Next week.